Welcome to Happy Hour at Home, a podcast about friends navigating adult life in the modern world. I'm your host, Chloe, and today we're talking about how teaching has changed in this pandemic. Today's friend is Andrew Lin, which is a pseudonym to protect their identity. Andrew is a teacher at a small charter school based in LA County. He went to UC Davis and got a BS in microbiology and went to USC for his master's in teaching. He was raised in a Korean household in the San Gabriel Valley in the 66 area. He's a first-year teacher who is extremely passionate about education, but is also a contained raging alcoholic who drinks to relieve the stress of dealing with Gen Z. He's someone who's hilarious at venting, but has a heart of gold and has the patience of a saint. Hello, Andrew!
Hello. Glad to be here. This is going to be really interesting. I wonder how this is going to go.
I know. I've been looking forward to this talk for a long time.
Yeah, me too.
I know you had a really long week, and it's Friday, and this is happy hour at home. So, Andrew, what are you drinking today for happy hour?
I had like this orange shandy, so I just mixed some white ale with like this orange syrup that I had at home.
That's good. Is that your go-to drink?
No, this is my first time trying it.
Wait, can you show it to me, actually? I want to see.
Yeah, it just looks like this.
It looks like mine, but mine's a Sapporo.
Oh, it's not the same thing.
So, you know, I've known you for quite some time, and I know that now you're an education professional. Mm-hmm. How did you get into education, and where are you now?
Going into education was the last thing on my mind. I did not even consider going into education. Like all through high school, when people ask me, what do you want to be? And like, I don't know, but teaching is definitely not going to be it. I go into Davis, I take courses on it, and I only took it just because I needed the free units and I wanted the EDA to boost up my GPA. I go into pharmaceutical company to work as like a microbiologist because, you know, that's like the Asian thing to do, work in the science field. But I absolutely hated it. It's not that I didn't hate the people, I just hated the work that I did. I only worked 3 days of the week. So I started to get into tutoring. I worked graveyard shifts at the pharmaceutical company.
Which is what time?
I worked 3 days of the week, so 12-hour shifts. So on Sundays, I will go in at 6 p.m. and I end at 6 a.m.
Oh my God.
Monday, I will start at 8 p.m. and end at 8 a.m. And Tuesday, I will start at 8 p.m. and end at 8 a.m.
But did you ever fall asleep on the job?
Oh, constantly. But the good part is I went traveling to Asia and I have no such thing called jet lag.
Oh.
My cousins were like, don't you have jet lag? No, this is the normal time I'm awake. Then I go back to work. As soon as I come back, they're like, don't you have jet lag? I'm like, no, this is pretty much the time I'm awake anyway. So they didn't care. But then like I have 4 days off and I was like, I'm bored out of my mind because everyone's at home at work working. So I was like, I'm going to get a job as a tutor. So I got a job as a tutor, but then the tutor wanted me to work Wednesdays about 4 hours after I ended work. And I was like, oh, it's going to be a little hard, but I'll try it anyway. So I tried it. I go in really tired, but I leave work extremely like happy, energized and stuff like that. And to the point where I really liked what I did. I made a lot of good connections with students. And that's when I decided, you know what, let's take this leap. Screw the pharmaceutical route and let's just try teaching. And I tried at USC, I got in, and as of right now, I do not regret it. I do not want to say yet, but I'll say yet.
So now you're a full-time teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Can you describe what your workplace is like, what the high school is like that you teach at?
When I started student teaching, I was placed at 2 traditional public schools, very large campus. Graduating class would be about like 500, 600, 700 people, similar to the high school that you and we went to. When I came here, they said that the entire class population is 500 people, which means that each grade is only being about 100 to 125 students. So it is a small school, extremely small. It's the smallest I've ever been to. It's a little interesting too, considering that I work in heart of LA County. So there's like a very large Hispanic population. Everyone on the campus knows me as, oh, you're that other Asian teacher on campus. I'm proud to say I am one of 3 Asians on campus. So everyone kind of knows me, but they don't ever like bring up the racism card. They just know me as like, oh, you're that other teacher that can't speak Spanish.
What are the students like at your school?
The majority of the population at the school is predominantly made up of Latinx students and a very small proportion of Black students. And most of the population are English learners. Outside from that, behaviorally, the students are actually, they're very good students. You just have to earn their respect. because a lot of students, because of the nature of where I work, a lot of students, they do come from a home of trauma. So if you happen to get on the student's bad side, you will forever stay on their bad side. But if you happen to earn the student's respect, the students will go out of their way and show you that they do respect you.
Could you share a story of when someone lost respect with the students and then how staff members gain respect?
There was a time when, I know for sure this is completely all on my fault, when I look back at it retrospectively, I initially thought this student of mine was cheating on a quiz. And because at the time and place, after we did the quiz, I heard her mention something that pretty much at that moment sounded like she was cheating on that quiz. Because it was a quiz, my head immediately went to, oh, you cheated on the quiz. And then I told her, how about next time we do this, you're not going to sit there, I want you to sit up front. And I kind of stopped it right there because I just assumed she was cheating. But I know in retrospect, I shouldn't have. She was very, very annoyed. One of my biggest rules in class is when I am talking, do not have your phone out. Because one, it's extremely disrespectful. And we're not people who can actually multitask. You either do one thing really well or you do two things really badly. So I told her to not have phones out. But when I was making announcements, she had her phone out the entire time. And I repeatedly told her, can you please put the phone away? And she said no. And I asked her a couple times. I can't remember how many times. But then I calmly went over to her. And while I was walking, she threatened and said, threatened me somewhere along the point where she wanted me to forcefully take her phone so that she has a reason to act up. But I went over to her, I calmly asked her, can I please have your phone? And she said no. I repeated it a couple times. It got to the point where she ended up calling me the N-word in class in front of like 20 students. I told her, you should know better than now not to ever call anyone the N-word. I was like, it doesn't matter if it's part of your vocabulary, it should not be something in your vocabulary. Then she keeps calling me the N-word multiple times. And then I got to the point where I said, I'm not doing this anymore. So I called administration, called security, told them to please take her out of the classroom. I talked to her. I pulled her aside a couple of days later and I told her, I first apologized for ever accusing she was cheating. And I said, that's not what I wanted. It just sounded like it was at that point, at that moment in time. And she was like, I'm sorry for ever calling you that. I should have explained to you what the whole situation was about. A couple weeks later, she gets transferred out of my class because she's failing another class and she has to retake it. She comes to my class a couple weeks later and she says, Mister, I got pulled out of her class. I was like, no shit. I mean, if you're not in my class for 2 weeks, I kind of know you're not there. And then I was like, how do you like it at the other teachers? And she was like, you're actually one of the few teachers I actually gained a lot of respect for because you don't sugarcoat anything. But in my head, I was thinking, you just called me the N-word like 5 times 2 weeks ago. How the hell am I one of your favorite teachers after you call me that? But I didn't want to say that. That's when I realized that at that moment, I might have lost her respect at that point in time, but pretty much gained it right back after.
That's a crazy story. How have other teachers reacted to this story?
The teachers said, I told very few colleagues, very few. They first said that the student was in the wrong for ever calling me the N-word. I get that she's in the wrong and I know that she never should have said it. They asked me, what did you do? I said, I apologize for accusing her of cheating. And she's like, that's a good thing you should have done because you did technically accuse her of cheating. And then the administration goes, you did everything right. You did it according to the book, textbook response. Not much more you can do in that case anyway.
There's been a lot of changes recently. The school seems to have a lot of challenges. So I know the pandemic hit and it changed pretty much all of your processes and your day-to-day. What were things that you were dealing with before the pandemic and how did the pandemic change everything?
I'm not going to sugarcoat anything. It really screwed every one of us over. Every single teacher, it screwed all of us over. It got to the point where because I'm a first-year teacher, even as a first-year teacher and also even if you're a veteran teacher of 5, 10, 15, 20 years, it never gets easy. But it finally got to the point where I understood everything I had to do. Things made sense. It flowed. I knew exactly what to do, what responses to have. And I know I'm not going to have responses for everything, but like I had things down and I finally understood how everything works. I got so comfortable with every single student. Like they were joking with me. I was joking with them. And bam, March 13th hit. And they said, we are going to close you for at least 2 weeks. It's weird because then the moment you get comfortable with everyone and everything, in that split moment, everything's just taken away. It's hard. And every teacher is saying the same thing too. It just doesn't feel right teaching online.
Well, what did you guys do in those 2 weeks?
We were told March 13th that we will be closed. And they said for the first, we will be closed initially only for 2 weeks. And they said that if we do decide to open, you will be notified ahead of time. The first week was pretty much just take this time to de-stress, relax. You've had a long year, you've had a tough year. Just take this time to relax, take care of your health, be with your friends and families. And then second week, that's when we started like having these daily meetings with all the other teachers saying, here's what we're going to do for this week. So during this week, make sure you contact all students in your advisory classes or homeroom. Contact every student, make sure they're okay, make sure they have food, shelter, internet, some type of electronic device such as a phone or computer. Update every single one of us and update your students, letting them know that it doesn't seem like the closure is going to end anytime soon, and give them a rundown of how things are going to work in your class.
You called every one of your students and you checked in on them.
So we don't call every single one of our students. So every teacher, we have this thing called homeroom, or in LA County, it's called advisory. From my understanding, I think it's called advisory in LA County. It is in my school. So homeroom, advisory, whatever it is, we have this class. Every teacher has an advisory class. We were supposed to call everyone in our advisory classes. And I had 20 some students, and I had to literally call every single student, ask them, how are you doing? How's your mental health? How are your parents doing? Do you have any siblings? How are your siblings doing? Do you have food on the table? Do you have food that could last you a while? Do you have internet connection? Do you have a computer device? And then tell them, this is how it's going to work for the time being.
Did anyone give any answers that were, or responses that were a little bit concerning?
No, at that moment in time, it wasn't concerning because then we were only 2 weeks in. When I told them that we're going to be closed for 2 weeks,
They're excited?
you're excited.
Yeah.
I told them on the very last day of school, that does not mean it is spring break. I know how y'all heads work. It is not spring break, so just take that out of your mind. But when I called them, they're like, I'm actually really enjoying this break. So they really took it fine in the beginning, but things change. So I meet with my students once a week. Sometimes I see them maybe twice a week. They also have my cell phone number, but they don't have my personal cell phone because I'm not giving my personal cell phone out to the kids. I downloaded an app called Text Now, and I give them a fake number, and they can text me on there, and I get notifications and everything. I've had students just email text me saying, hey, mister, and I reply, hey, what's up? Like, nothing, just checking up on you. Are you okay? I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. Thanks for checking out. How are you doing? And they're like, mister, I'm dying. They said they miss being in class. Because for them, most of them, like I said, a lot of the students, they come from a house of trauma or a traumatic background. A classroom is their safe zone. They feel safe in class. They have fun with their friends. But now that they're stuck at home, their parents, many parents probably won't let them go out. They're pretty much cooped up inside the home. So they got to a point where they're sick and tired of this. They just want to go out of the house. They want to go back to school, just go back to going into that learning environment. One of them says, mister, I'm just so sick and tired of this. Can you just tell me what the hell is going on and how to pass your damn class? Because I'm just so done with it. I'm like, I wish I could help you, but here's what you need to do. And he was like, so confused. So I was like, you know what? It's fine. Just take it easy. It is 10:30. Stop. You're not going to do any work at 10:30. Just stop. I understand what your concerns are. Just stop. Just wait for me in the morning and I'll send you a long email with the response to answer your question, how to do everything. Then he ends it with, mister, I appreciate. Really, really appreciate everything you've done for me. It's like I can't even put it in words how much I really appreciate everything you're doing for me right now. So it seems like a lot of them are finally like reaching that breaking point where they're just done.
Wow. Okay, so that was the students. How did the staff and the administrators, how did they respond right when shelter in place was announced?
It was hectic. I remember exactly what went on too, because so the students, they're a lot more tech savvy than we ever will be. We grew up with technology being slowly introduced to us, but they grew up with technology handed out to them in a silver spoon. They knew everything. We started class, and the students, the first thing they asked me was, mister, are we closed? And I'm like, how do you know? And then they're like, LA County just announced that we're closed. I'm like, what the hell? No, they didn't. So I typed in Google, LAUSD school closure, and the superintendent of LAUSD announced the closure. And then I was like, as of right now, I don't know anything. The administration hasn't told us anything. So teachers were just going about their day. And then literally the last period, they sent us an email saying the school will be closed for 2 weeks. They give us a list of steps of everything we need to do. So all teachers were pretty much like scrambling at that point. Like we still had to teach our lesson and everything, but we also had to scramble to make sure every student got a laptop and everything like that. It was a big, big, big hassle the day it was announced the school closure. And no one knew what was going on either. We still don't. We only know what we need to do here on out from this point on, but we don't know anything after that.
I'm sure the staff had to get together and talk about some important decisions that you guys had to make. Were there any controversial topics that you guys brought upon or decided for or against that was really insane?
See, that's the part. You said the administration should have gotten together to discuss things. That's what they should have done, but they did not. As teachers, we want to feel as if we belong. That's all we want. I personally, and I could speak of this from other colleagues too, we do feel like we belong in the school, but we feel as if there's a disconnect between the administration, teachers, and then students. Teachers, we feel we belong with the students and between that circle, but it feels like as if teachers and students are in it for themselves, and admin pretty much makes every decision and says, this is what you're going to do because we decided this, and we don't get a say in it.
Did they tell you how exactly every teacher should transfer the entire curriculum to online?
No, but that's also the thing. I don't think any teacher knows because, and I really don't want to say this. I've heard it so many times. I hate these two words, but I'm going to say it anyway. These are quote unquote unprecedented times.
Oh.
No one knows exactly what to do. So pretty much as soon as the closure hit, we were thrown into the deep end to figure everything out.
What did they equip you with? Did they give you anything?
No. The only thing that they helped us with to make sure that every student has access to internet was one-on-one computer distribution. So every child, every student gets a computer. Even if they already have a computer, they get a computer just in case.
That's awesome. When did that happen?
March 13th, the day of the closure.
Wow, they just had all these computers just sitting around?
We were told that our closure would happen at around 1 p.m., but I think the administration knew exactly that the school was going to be closed. It was just a matter of time of when they tell us. So I think because admin knew they were going to be closed, they started to think about how are we going to do this. So we had a lot of tech people running around, making sure we had enough computers for everyone.
How did all the teachers get together and figure out what the best practices were to make an online classroom environment sustainable or effective?
That is a million-dollar question. We don't know what is an effective method of online curriculum. Some of my colleagues, they do things a lot differently than I do. I hold those mandatory weekly lectures. I don't do it anymore because I'm done lecturing, and it's now just all projects.
Mm-hmm.
But before that, I was the only teacher doing the online mandatory online lectures.
Wait, which are what?
Just lectures where they come in and I would use Zoom. I would mute all of them. I'd do screen share, and I just lecture over the PowerPoint. But other teachers, they're more of, here are the assignments you need to do. Here's your PowerPoint lectures. If you need help, here are my my office hours, et cetera, et cetera.
Wait, so they don't even teach class? They just give homework?
Yeah, pretty much. But everyone's like a different person. I did those mandatory Zoom lectures because it makes you listen a little bit more to a certain extent. They're not going to be fully engaged. I mean,
right.
Pretty sure you had online lectures when you were in college too, because I did.
Yeah.
I never paid attention to those.
It's hard to, you know, stay engaged.
Yeah. So I knew the students, they're going to not be the most engaged, but some of them are.
Mm-hmm.
But I still held those mandatory online lectures as a way for them to be a little bit more engaged. But I keep those online lectures extremely short. So I try to keep those lectures max 30 minutes.
Oh, that's good.
I tried to give them a one weekly assignment so that because I know you have a lot of things going on at home, you have other classes. And I told them, honestly, if I was in your shoes, would I do the work? No. That's why I think they also like me because I speak truthfully from my experience. If I'm not going to do it when I was in your shoes, what makes me think you're going to do it?
So how are they doing on the homework? Are they actually finishing them and submitting them?
It's different because I teach mostly seniors and I teach some freshmen.
Mm-hmm.
My seniors, I can't speak about my seniors completely and I can't make an assumption because, well, they're seniors and they need to graduate. So maybe that's why they're doing all the work. Or I have a good amount. I have like maybe 90% attendance on doing all the work.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah, so it's good. But the thing is it because they're seniors or is it because they know it's still school? My freshmen, though, I've had on a good day, a little more than half.
Oh my god, no.
On average, a third.
You're joking.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, in my opinion, I think they might be doing that because, well, they're freshmen. You have 4 years in high school, so you technically might have 3 more years to make it up. But you and I both know that's not making it up. I emailed, texted, called, nothing.
They just don't respond.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Have you asked other teachers if that's what's happening with their freshmen?
Yeah, same.
So it's the entire freshman class that is like basically flunking your classes.
Mm-hmm.
Are they on track to failing?
That's the horrible way to say it, but yes.
And then you're going to have to deliver that information.
Yeah.
How does that affect you at all?
The thing is, it did. And that's the part I said, it did. The thing is, like, when I was in class, in-person teaching, I went so far to make sure they pass.
Mm-hmm.
I tried everything. Like, I would reach out to them. I would pull them aside after class, find out, what do you like to do? Let's just talk. Don't even see me as a teacher. Just think of me as another person who wants to know you a little bit more. Like, I would talk to them and figure out who they are as a person and then try to incorporate that to make sure they pass. I was finally getting through to one person. I had fun doing that. But now, online teaching, there's only so much you can do through text, phone call, email. It's just not the same. I don't know if this is like that for my other colleagues, and I can't speak about this for like other educators as well, but how do I feel about students failing my class? They're going to fail the class. That's all I feel. Am I happy they're going to fail? No. Do I feel sad they're going to fail? No. It is what it is. It's gotten to that point. I've done everything I can, except I can't. An option is, like, I've seen on like social media of people saying, this teacher wasn't in the classroom, but he decided to go out to the other student's house and like lecture in the backyard. I can't do that. I can't go into the middle of LA, knock in front of the door, have them open the door and just lecture right in front of them.
Oh my God.
Like a colleague and I was talking about this, and I know these are unprecedented times, but this isn't what we signed up for. And I know as teachers, we still have to do everything we can, but it's gotten to the point where I don't want to be teaching right now. The joy of it is gone. Like, if students reach out to me and say, hey, Mr., we really need your help, can you help? And I'll gladly open my phone, text them, email them, do Zoom conferences and everything. Like, I still love being a teacher. I just hate doing it online. And that's starting to show on my whole outlook and whole demeanor. Like, whenever we have these meetings, several colleagues and I, we just text saying, we're done with this. We can't do this anymore.
What are you and your colleagues doing to manage your own well-being, outlook, and careers?
As for careers, that's one thing that we're 100% sure about. Do we regret doing this? No. We love being a teacher, and that's something that will never change. As for our own mental state, we do everything we can. We do whatever it is like we do to de-stress. Some of my colleagues, they read books, and they read books nonstop. Another of my colleagues, he's starting to practice working on some art, whether it be like drawing, music, photography, stuff like that. As for me, I read some books here and there. I go for a walk. Sometimes I go for drives, talk to friends, doing anything like that just to maintain the level of sanity that I need to keep doing this job to the best I can.
You have so much to worry about.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask a little bit more about the whole preparation component.
Mm-hmm.
You guys have handed off Chromebooks to all the students. You guys have a Zoom account. You told me before that Zoom is free for all the teachers right now, even though it's really expensive for corporations. And if as long as you use your email to sign up, then you can use it, which is great. But what about everything else? Like, what else has the school prepared for your student body or your staff to make sure that they are well equipped?
That's pretty much it. Teachers have pretty unlimited time on Zoom because a basic Zoom account allows for 40 minutes only. But teachers have a free unlimited amount of time to use Zoom as long as they sign up using their school email.
Students as well?
No, only teachers. So we have two emails. We have like a teacher email, then we have like a student associated email.
How do they behave in Zoom classes? Do they like do funny things? I've seen a lot of memes on social media. Are they true?
They're not exactly the same as them, but they are shockingly accurate.
Really?
Because I knew Zoom was a completely separate platform that I've never once used before, I spent a good day trying to figure out the nook and like the little like potholes that I could potentially fall into, the settings of what I can do. I spent the day figuring that out so I could potentially minimize the amount of behavioral issues I have on Zoom. We never thought about what are the potential pitfalls of using Zoom. Then a very specific incident happened at our school, and that was reported to the administration, and then the administration said, oh, crap.
Wait, what was that incident?
Students started to figure out how to mess around with the whiteboard and annotation function on Zoom. A student figured that out, and there was a lot of profanity being said, very inappropriate jokes that were being said, to the point where it was very worrisome because the teacher didn't know exactly how to navigate through those pitfalls. So that happened, and then the administration said, oh, here's what we can do instead to minimize those instances, and they gave us a training on that.
Was that training useful?
The training was useful, but to me, I spent a whole day beginning of the closure to figure out how everything works. So I knew how to do everything. And then I asked students, Some of you may have heard exactly what happened because it's a very tight-knit school. 500 students, everyone knows each other. So I was like, I'm pretty sure you heard. Do you know what happened? And thank you for not acting that way in my class. And they're like, Mister, if we do that to you, we know you're going to be all over our asses about it because you are low-key scary when you're mad. And I'm like, damn right. You better listen to me. Who do you think you are? But they were like, no, Mister, we respect you too much to actually mess around with you like that.
Do you have a lot of audio issues when you do these classes where people are unmuted and they just start saying stuff?
They do. But the thing is, like, on Zoom, you have this option to click mute all participants. And then there's another option below that that says allow participants to mute themselves. I unclick it so they cannot unmute. But then I do a little joke saying like, oh, ho, 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 there's a mute all function. Guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to click that. Then I read out allow participants to mute themselves. Hell no. I'm going to talk shit about all of you and you can't talk shit back to me. Then I unclick it. And then I start talking crap. But then I type in the chat box, just kidding. And then I go with the lecture. And I was like, if you have any questions, just type it in. And they actually do type in like appropriate questions.
Were there any moments that were really positive to experience because of online classes?
I've had moments where I felt validated. And I said this before with that other student who wrote in a text, thank you, Mister. I really appreciate everything you're doing right now. I felt really, really validated then. Another student said, there are very few teachers that I actually respect. I didn't ask that student, am I one of them? Because then I didn't want to like step over boundaries. But in my opinion is, if you didn't respect me, then I don't see you ever texting me and saying there's only a few teachers in this school that I actually respect. This week is Teachers Appreciation Week. Students got together and they put like this little sign that said, thank you, Mr. L. Because they call me Mr. L. They don't call me like Mr. Lin. When that happened, I was like, oh, I felt validated. I feel happy doing what I do. Stuff like that. As for funny moments, I have moments where I go, oh dear God, this can't be happening right now.
Like what?
I had a point where I inputted a calendar with like deadlines and I inputted a rubric. A student took a picture of the rubric and said, Mister, is this your calendar? I'm like, that is not my calendar. Do you see January, February, March, April, May, June, July, August, September, October, November, December? It says rubric on the top. And then he was like, oh, I thought this was a calendar. Like, oh, dear God.
It seems like your kids are funny. They come from all kinds of backgrounds and they really like you.
That's what I like to believe. Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm hearing. It sounds like the way that you approach them and you engage with them is a little bit unorthodox, maybe different from other teachers. How have other teachers or staff members responded to the way you're teaching?
It's very unorthodox. So I wasn't a big believer in cursing in class, and I'm still not. But there are times where it does come out. Like when I'm lecturing, I don't ever curse. When I'm speaking to students one-on-one about a particular topic, whether it be if I'm talking to one-on-one academically, I never curse because that's not academic language. But if I am talking to them personally on a social level, that's when certain cuss words come out. And I know it's controversial. I know a lot of teachers are going to say you should never curse in class. But in my opinion, if I'm able to draw a line between what is academic language versus what is social language, then that's fine. And the students know that too. I told them, I don't mind cursing in class, but if you are talking to me, you are never going to curse at me or to me. I don't care if you're not cursing to me. If you're talking to me, you are not cursing. So they know that. A lot of teachers are going to find that really controversial. They're like, oh my God, you're not supposed to curse and stuff like that. But to me, it's more, that is my way of reaching to them on a personal level. Reaching out, gaining some form of rapport with the student. Them seeing me as a teacher, but also someone who wants to really care about the students as well. I told other teachers that sometimes I curse in class. They're like, I don't curse, but it's your way of teaching. Who am I to stop you? It's just when admin comes in, I zip it. And it's all 100% PG. G-rated language.
Of course.
Like, I don't even say crap or damn. It's like more gosh darn it.
Oh, golly.
Yeah. Oh, golly. Oh, how dare you. But when they leave the door, I was like, oh, thank Jesus. She's out of here. God damn it. I can't do this anymore.
That's so funny.
Or like sometimes when I drop things, I was like, oh, shit. Then I stare at it and I look back up and I start lecturing. The kids are like, you're not going to pick it up. I was like, you know, my fat ass is not going to pick that up.
Oh.
Yeah, they're like, yeah, Mister, we know. And I'm like, you messed up. Are you calling me a fat ass? He's like, Mister, you called yourself first and you shouldn't have agreed with me.
Trap question.
Yeah, stuff like that. So I reach out to them at a personal level, like the way I talk. Teachers, they don't question it because they know that this is my way of doing it. And every teacher has a different way of reaching out to students, and this is my way.
What's another unorthodox practice of yours that you think is really important to engage your students? but other teachers or administrators may strongly disagree.
So this was something I never considered doing until I started student teaching. I like to, not every single day, not often, but maybe once every 2 weeks, once a month. It really depends on what is happening. I like to do this little breathing activity with students where I just have to write down what's called on the board. I don't want to say it because very few teachers actually use this term. But once they write down on the board, students know exactly what they're going to be doing. I just say, forget about everything that's going on in your life right now. Forget about school. Forget about your home troubles. Forget about relationship problems. Forget about personal social problems. Just forget all about it. Just close your eyes and just breathe. Count several counts in, count several counts out. So count 1, 2, 3, 4 in, hold it for 2 seconds, count 1, 2, 3, 4 out. And constantly do that. Doing that, it helps them get rid of like all anxiety, stress problems and stuff like that. And it just relieves them. I do that to improve their mental health. I believe that it's better to have a student be in a proper state of mind rather than know the particular anatomical positions of the human body, know the biological terminology of something, know the reasoning behind something. I'd rather you be in a very good state of mind before you even start learning about that, because it helps. It helps the students. And I've gotten to the point where students were asking me, Mr., when are we going to do this thing again? Like, don't worry, I have some planned out. And they love it. I told other teachers, and they're like, that is a great thing you're doing, and I really applaud you for doing it. And they said they're not going to end their class because it's not something they do, but that's fine. But they said they applaud me for doing it. But I had an administrator come in. The administrator observed what I was doing and was asked if I could potentially remove it from my practice because it doesn't align with particular state standards of learning. I told her that I'll maybe try to cut it down, but I'm not going to remove it. I know it's controversial with certain teachers or administration or other educational personnel because of what I'm doing is maybe like mental health related or something, but I don't understand the whole stigma behind the whole mental health. It's a real deal. Students are falling into depression more often. Suicide rates are up. Behind certain IDs, you also have to put a suicide hotline just in case. If we're going to do all that, then why the hell is it inappropriate for me to practice improving students' mental health?
Did you say this?
I didn't, but this is something I was thinking about in my head. But I told her that I'll do what I can to decrease it, but I'm not going to get rid of it. And do I plan on decreasing the amount I do it, or do I plan on decreasing the length of how often I do it, or the time limit per day that I do it? I don't plan on changing that whatsoever. Would I rather them learn the state standards, or would I rather them be more mentally healthy? I'm always 100% of the time going to choose, I'd rather you be mentally healthy than rather them teach you to score high on a particular test.
Was this a big conversation between you and this administrator? Like, did you guys duke it out?
We didn't duke it out, but we did go back and forth at it for a little bit. She didn't believe in the reason behind why I do it, and I was firm and that I'm not going to change this. I told other colleagues, and they're like, they really applaud me for doing what I do. And they said, I should still keep doing it.
Do you still do it now?
I did it about a couple days before the closure because students were stressing out. But after the closure, is it going to work? No, because we're not in a controlled environment. And the students also have a home.
Yeah.
And in that household, if their parents are working, they have siblings. They have to take care of their siblings.
Right. So it could be really disruptive.
Mm-hmm.
Do you send them free apps that they can use to become more mindful?
They know the app that I use.
What app do you use?
It's called Calm.com.
Calm.com. Great.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, Calm.com. That's what I use. It costs some, but you could use like the free version and just press play.
So it looks like COVID-19 magnified a lot of the administrative issues.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I guess the divide between teachers and administration.
Yeah.
You guys are feeling that pain now more than ever. What are some things that I guess you guys are thankful for or happy about? What are things that the students are even happy with?
I can't say for sure what the student is happy about in regard to what the school has done.
Mm-hmm.
But something I am particularly happy that the school has done is we gave every single student a computer. So they have one-on-one computer distribution. We also, for about the first 2-3 weeks of the school closure, we initially planned on only providing free food, breakfast, lunch, and dinner to every single student and their family for the first week or so. But the administration changed that, and we've been giving them breakfast, lunch, and dinner for the last time I heard was 3 weeks. I don't know if we still do it now, but I was extremely happy about that because then some people, the parents are still working, they're paying bills, and now sometimes they're gonna be, what, reduced hours, they sometimes can't buy food. And sometimes they're at work the entire time and students don't know how to cook. So just the fact that we're actually providing them with food, I was actually really, really happy about that.
How do you check in on your students or the families, or how does the school check in on the students and the families on how they're doing in terms of their well-being or mental health?
As for me, I don't text every single student every day because I have a large amount of students, but with those lectures, that would be my point of checking in on them to make sure they're okay. I told every single student, I know that I'm just your teacher, but if you ever need someone to talk to and you can't find anyone, just, you know my number, just send me a text and I'll listen.
And have they?
Some have. I know we're mandated reporters, but any single, but the stuff that students have told me is just more relationship problems. And like, I don't need to know, but I reached out.
Like love?
Not like that, but they're like calling me like personal stories about like their relationships. And I'm like, I'll give you like advice, but because I don't know you and I don't know how your relationship is personally, so I could give you like literally unbiased advice. They like that. But so that's how I check up on their mental health. As for schools, the school does call home, but I don't know if it's a personal call or if it's a robocall. I think recently there was a robocall sent out asking about how are you doing, shelters, food. But that's literally the extent of what I know. There's a lack of communication between what's going out to the parents and what's being told to us as teachers.
It's hard. I think that's a hard topic to tackle, especially for administrators.
Yeah.
It's the end of the academic year.
Mm-hmm.
I heard AP tests are canceled.
Yeah, it is canceled. SATs have been postponed. ACT is postponed. Uh-huh.
What's going on with finals and how are you guys going to test your students? Like, are people cheating on assessments? Do you guys administer exams? How are you handling all of that?
We do not administer exams.
Okay.
It's more projects.
That's a deliberate decision because of the risks?
That's a deliberate decision because then we didn't know exactly how to test students. We didn't know exactly what else to do. So the administration decided to do a project-based learning. We assign students a project, and then that project will pretty much decide if the student passes or incompletes the class.
I know that you launched a new project this week, I believe.
I'm not going to go into detail about it, so
okay.
They don't know exactly who I am. But I have been working with other teachers thoroughly about several different projects. We've been giving students options on the projects that they want to do. But it's really a hassle right now because no teacher has ever done, no one in our school we've ever done project-based learning to this magnitude before. Am I proud of this project? I am very happy about this project. Do I think I bit off more than I could chew? Yeah. Every single day, I think about, holy crap, what did I get myself into? This is just too much for me to handle, but I can't back out now.
What is like the final form of the project?
My portion is a report.
Okay.
Other teachers have been doing a presentation.
Mm.
Other teachers have been allowing videos, TikToks, creation of an Instagram page.
TikToks?
Yeah.
Instagram? Mm-hmm. That's exciting.
Yeah, so it's stuff like that. There is no guidelines on which we have to do anything.
How are you guys handling the more social aspects of school? Student body elections, prom, graduation, clubs, pep rallies?
Gone, 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 gone.
There's no even like an alternative?
They're all gone. The only alternative is graduation, which is virtual.
Okay, on Zoom?
We don't know.
You have no guidance.
We were just given the go-to, or not the go-to, we were just told, what was it, yesterday? Mm-hmm. No, 2 days ago? I can't remember. I don't even know what day of the week anymore. I was told sometime this mm-hmm. week that we were going to be forward with a virtual graduation, but that's it.
That's all?
Prom? No. Student body? No. Clubs? No. Pep rallies? No. Senior events? No. Sports? No.
Oh my God.
Everything's gone. So pretty much think back to your senior year and everything that you were involved in and what you look forward to. None of that they're living through.
Holy moly.
So those milestones of going to prom, dressing up in a suit and tie with your date, gone. The moment where you walk down the aisle, receive your diploma, shake hands, and literally make that big smile, gone. The moment where you get your yearbook and ask, hey, do you want to sign my yearbook? They're all gone.
That's really depressing.
I took it personally hard too because I'm in this weird position where I'm a first year teacher, but I'm also teaching seniors.
Right.
So this was my first year teaching, but they're also my first graduating class of seniors.
Oh.
I told them, the day of a graduation, I guarantee you I will be there. I told them, I guarantee you, I don't care what happens, I will find a way to be at your graduation, because I plan on making fun of every single one of you while you're crossing that stage. I told them that this is my first year teaching, and I said that if I continue this route, I may have many more senior students, but you will forever always have that special place as my first senior graduating class.
Wow, that's so meaningful.
And like, Miss O, you're going to make me cry. I was like, I have a box of tissues. But I took it particularly hard because then they're my first graduating class of seniors. Yeah. I wanted to see them walk on the stage, but I don't get to live through that either. Yeah.
That is really sad.
Mm-hmm. A lot of students are taking it really hard.
I don't know how LA is going to handle this, but at least in the Bay Area, it's pretty strict up here. And pretty much every single company is asking for everyone to work from home until the end of the year. And so there's a chance that this online education format is going to persist for the rest of the year. What do you think needs to happen to make this work in the long term?
We need consistency, legitimate consistency on what is going to happen. Because before this happened, we already knew administration was unorganized or disorganized, and we knew that from the get-go. But the thing is, it didn't bother us too much because we were in our classrooms doing what we wanted and we liked what we did. So that disorganization didn't play a big part, but ever since its closure, like that disorganization, it became magnified. So in order for online education to work, in my opinion, we need legit consistency, and we also need to have a voice on what is going to happen. It can't work if administration makes all the decisions and teachers pretty much are just a scapegoat. This is what administration told us, so this is what we're going to do. No, it doesn't work that way. Teachers need to have a say in what's going on. And as educators, you cannot make a decision without notifying the parents first. Parents should always be told what is going to happen as they are decided. As educators, we came into this business knowing that if something goes wrong in the classroom, it's not the student's fault, it's our fault. When the student called me the N-word, I didn't say it was her fault. I first said, I apologize because I accused you of cheating. That was something I should not have done. We came into this profession knowing that students are always going to come first, and that never is going to change. Students, parents always need to come first. If administration makes a decision, let the parents know, and then let the teachers then explain upon what is going to happen. Because I feel like right now the school is not doing that. There's been a lot of changes, and I know many people are not used to change or they hate change. But if you make one change, a big drastic change, keep that change going for a long time before implementing change again and again and again and again. The administration has been implementing so much change. It disrupts the kids' rhythm, the parents' rhythm, our rhythm. And when the kids get stressed, or when the parents get stressed, the kids get stressed, and then we get stressed. Everyone is doing their best, but it would be much better if the people in charge could be doing better in keeping everything easy and effective as possible. The administration, they don't think about the teacher's mental health. I would really, 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 just with the other teachers and administration, just have a venting session. Just say, you know what, this is what I've been feeling. These are my frustrations. Go do something about it, because I'm so tired of and so frustrated with everything that's going on. And I think just that doing the venting session is, they're going to understand that we need the time to actually speak about things and give them our honest opinion about what's the pros and cons about doing something a particular way. So what I think needs to happen, legit consistency and teacher input needs to be gathered, and then always, always, always needs to put the student first, because that's why we chose this business. We didn't choose this business because of the money. Every teacher in America knows, teachers in America, they don't make jack shit. We chose it because we want to make a difference in people's lives. And from that point on, we always have to put students first. Always, always, always. There's this one model that I live by when it comes to teaching. It was something I read when I went back to school to get my teacher credential. The students don't care how much you know until they know how much you care.
Wow, I love that quote.
And I read that when I was reading an article because it was for homework. And well, I didn't want to read, but I read that and I was like, oh my goodness, I love this quote. I live by that quote when I'm in the classroom. And I think administration should follow that too.
Why are administrators so different from teachers?
I wish I knew. I think it might be because I'm not saying that all administrators are bad. I've seen some administrators that are amazing, but there are some administrators that just do things their way without reaching out to teachers, and that's the part that frustrates me.
A lot of people I know are actually not in education, and so we don't always know what's going on or even how to help. For those outside the education space, What do you think they can do to help out?
At this point in time, I do not know what can be done. It sucks how it is at this point in time that a pandemic has to happen that people are finally to realize the value that teachers have, especially parents. Because then I've been hearing like these memes coming around saying like, you lied to me. You said my child was a complete joy to have in the class. You lied to me. She's running around 24/7, constantly eating the live long day. It sucks that a pandemic has to happen for them to realize that what we do is not easy. I think it would help if teachers have another voice backing them up, and not just teachers' voices, but teachers' voices and other professional voices, such as coders, doctors, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. If they had a voice and spoke out in support of teachers, and that what the teachers do is also an important part of society, but it doesn't seem like teachers get the full credit that they deserve.
That was Andrew Lin, first-year teacher at a high school in LA with unorthodox methods of teaching, advocate of mental health support for youths, and someone just doing his best to get his seniors to graduate. As someone outside of the education sector, I thought this chat was incredibly eye-opening. I've gained a lot of empathy and respect for teachers holding up the public education system and parents having to take care of their kids while working full-time. If you have your own stories or thoughts on how the pandemic has changed the world of education, I'd love to hear it. Write me at colorsofchloe@gmail.com or visit me at my new YouTube channel at Colors of Chloe. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.